You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Catholic Things. We discuss for 50 minutes every afternoon. It looks like there's a new potential referendum in Scotland going independent. Of course, this seems to be the trend. Independence, isolation, and why that is a problem. Because, yeah, we want subsidiarity, but at the same time, we want solidarity. And hyper-subsidiarity isn't really subsidiarity at all. It is simply isolationism. We'll talk about that this afternoon. Also, Kellyanne Conway on the news shows over the weekend saying that there's many ways that the government can surveil individuals. It doesn't just have to be wiretapping. So now, with no real evidence that the Obama administration had done anything to Donald Trump, President Trump, forgive me, Donald Trump at the time, this is perhaps a problem of paranoia. We'll get into that discussion. And then a landslide in Ethiopia that kills close to 50. Why I see this as a greater problem than terrorism, and why we have to understand this situation is much more egregious than any attack. We'll talk about that this afternoon and more. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, back in just a moment.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back in Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour, Culture, Current Events, Catholic Things. Thank you for joining us. Well, now it appears as though there could be another referendum in Scotland for the vote of independence. Yeah, they tried that even before Brexit, and it ended up with not enough support from the Scottish people. But now there's a new push for independence, kind of seems to be a global movement, right? And if you recall, after the Brexit vote, then candidate Trump was in Scotland, and he was saying, we're going to do this in America, right? Which I didn't understand, and I still don't understand. That's why I laugh when I say it, because America has independence, unless he means he's going to force the states to finally declare their succession. I don't know. Don't know. Maybe that's where we're headed. But what I do know is that the European Union has been a good thing. Now, you could argue that all day long and say, well, Leo, it's just another form of socialism. Don't think so. It's been a big form of capitalism, because the euro, if you've traveled in Europe, and you've exchanged your cash, your American cash for the euro, you know that you don't get as much, right? The euro has traditionally outperformed the American dollar, and that's a sign of a strong economy for the European Union, which means that all of those countries who are a part of that union have benefited. Because there was a time when, certainly depending on the country and depending on the time of their currency boom or crash, you could go in for a dollar, especially in Italy. This is what I've heard, not having ever been in Italy, but there are those who I know who've traveled frequently, and exchange your dollar for whatever. Two of the dollar equivalents in Italy at the time. And I know that people miss that, but if that's a reason, and granted, I don't think that's the reason, but if that's the reason why from our side of the pond you would support something of that nature, please see the problem with that. Because if that's what you're thinking, then you're simply saying, well, their economy needs to tank while ours is strong. That's basically what you're saying. You know, ideally, there would be at least some sort of equivalence, and that's what the European Union did. Not only did it give equivalence, it also gave economic strength. So as we continue to see splintering, to me, it is unfortunately just an attitude. It's just an attitude, and not really a good one. And if you consider the fact that you've got here's how I would look at this analogy. You've got a motorcycle or a bus, right? Motorcycle's a heck of a lot sexier, fun to ride, really fun to ride, dangerous, but generally it's only you or you and a companion. And that companion generally is not going along for the transportation to get somewhere. They're going along for the thrill with you, right? I had a motorcycle. I know what it's like. I had a motorcycle and a girlfriend who loved to ride my motorcycle with me in college. So I know that dynamic well. I know it well. At the same time, you could have a bus. And that bus, it's not nearly as sexy. Certainly not fast. But you know what? It's getting people where they need to go. And it's doing it in a way that's collective. And it's saying, we're on this, in this, together. We're getting there together. And we're going to take our time to get there to ensure that everyone gets where they need to go. Are you on the motorcycle or are you on the bus? Now, I know one looks a whole lot sexier, a whole lot more exciting, and it's what many of us are drawn to. I'm that guy, right? Believe me, I'm that guy. I know the fun of it. I know the appeal. I know the charm, the magnetism. I get it. And not just of a motorcycle, but of rugged individualism. I get it. I know. But at the same time, you could be that rugged individualist and drive the bus, right? Because you could say, together, we're going to have this spirit of subsidiarity, meaning working on that local level and ensuring that things get done on that level, while at the same time being focused on the global solidarity and figuring out how do we do this effectively so that everybody wins. Everybody wins. Because unfortunately, when we get radically independent and we get so focused on doing things our way to the detriment of others, not to the benefit, but to really, unfortunately, exclude others without any real regard, we haven't created a win-win situation. We've created an us-against-them situation. I see it certainly in our own country. It was certainly the surge of support behind our current president that got him elected, this attitude of it's all about us, this attitude that others can't have a voice here, others can't have a place here, there are others who are a threat to us, whether they're from another country, whether they profess another religion, whether they have questionable orientation, you name it. We're not here for them. They're here to cannibalize, to be parasitical. They're here to get in our way, to stop us from getting what we want. There's not enough to go around. Why should we care for them? And that attitude, again, only leads... Isolation will ultimately lead to desolation. Right? That's what we got to understand. As Catholics, in the tradition of Catholicism, especially now in Lent, we look for times of reflection, contemplation, and in those times, we're looking for a little bit of introspection when we can be in a mode of just quiet, ideal alone time, but that's not isolationism, right? That's simply saying we're going to find that moment whether it's 5 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, whatever it happens to be that can fit into your schedule, where you can really focus some time in prayer, in thought, in discernment, in listening, in being guided. That's good. That's a good thing. But it's not just blanketly saying, it's all about me. And because it's all about me, I can have no regard for anybody else. Yeah, I've even said this before, and I still believe this. If the message I heard was, we're going to get this right first so we can then go do this, right? I'm going to get on the motorcycle because the bus doesn't fit in my driveway, right? I've only got room for a motorcycle. I got to ride the motorcycle to the lot where the bus is parked because then I'll get on the bus, and then I'll go get everybody on the bus, right? If we had that attitude, if we were willing to say we're going to do this first so we can do that, I'm willing to get behind that. I'll get behind anything that might look like, from all outward appearances, to be something that it's not, because I'm okay with that. I'm okay with, I don't care what it looks like if I know what the goal ultimately is. Who cares? Who cares? Okay, let's all get on our motorcycles. We'll get on the buses, right? Because we're all going to drive the buses. But we'll get our motorcycles there because, you know, you see that analogy? But I don't hear that. I'm hearing, too bad for you, we're riding our motorcycle. There's no room for you. You can't get on here. It's a one-seater. There's not even room for a passenger. Sorry. And this is the attitude that I hear in America now. Certainly the attitude that brought about the Brexit vote. It's the attitude that's bringing about, which I think is pretty much, at this point, after the British revolt, I think it's pretty clear that we're going to see the same thing happen in Scotland. I can't imagine. And like I say, I mean, having Scottish ancestry, from what I gather, I'm romanticized by that, at least. I'm Father Benedict Groeschel, who I love dearly, God rest his soul, he told me this story one time about my last name being Brown. And he's like, oh, so you're one of the Brown boys. You know, I was like, Brown boys? What, do you know my family? What is this? Which, you know, I'm the only Brown boy, for one. But he tells me this story about Brown, Black, Green, and White, these four British surnames, basically being arbitrarily assigned to Scottish clans who were unwilling to settle into the annexation of Scotland in Great Britain, in the British Empire, right? So at that time, those who were unwilling to be a part of this new formation were rebels. They were rebels, and the British Empire simply said, okay, well, it's too bad for you. You want your colors, you want your clan, you'll get them, but you're going to be Black, Brown, Green, and White. Interesting. And for me, a guy with an independent spirit, no doubt, that's appealing and it's romantic. And it's exciting to think that that may have been my background. But I promise you this, my attitude now is not one, nor has it ever been one of isolationism, but it's one of independence that says, how, as an independent individual, can we bring about a better opportunity for others? If we're thinking that way, if we're getting on our motorcycle to get to the bus, that's okay. But if all we're doing is saying, we're not driving the bus, nor are we getting on the bus because we want no part of this collective understanding of community, there's a problem. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things we talk about for 50 minutes every afternoon. Thank you so much for being with us. Well, we get the claims of the wiretap last week, sometime in the past couple of weeks. And now basically the president being challenged to produce some sort of evidence or, I guess, retract the claim. I mean, what do you do? How do you do that, right? And what do you really, what do you do with that? Because if somebody has already put that out there, right? It's like any conspiracy theory. You put it out there, kind of spins around in the cycle for a while. What is anyone thinking? Well, we really don't know. It's unsubstantiated. And sometimes those situations can be more damning than if we just knew and knew facts and got the bottom line. Because there are those who are always going to assume, well, there's no facts, there's no proof, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen, right? And it doesn't help when Kellyanne Conway is doing her weekend tour of news shows, WashingtonPost.com, with a story with her basically saying there are many ways for the government to place surveillance on citizens, aside from wiretap. So, you know, kind of backpedaling a little bit. Well, maybe it wasn't a wiretap. Did we say wiretap? Because it was just watching. Was Obama watching The Apprentice? Was that what it was? Is that what it boiled down to? Was he watching the debates? Because he could kind of surveil, I guess, on what then-candidate Trump was doing. Oh. But kind of back to what I was talking about a moment ago with isolationism, when we get to this point of just paranoia, where we're convinced that everything is after us, against us, designed to derail us, that's a problem. And you know, I get it. I know. I'll share this. So I'm a musician, been a musician for literally all of my life. I recall, I want to say it was five. I got my first harmonica, right? And I got the little book and I studied it and I got it down and I could play all the little songs on the book. And it was just kind of natural. I mean, it just made sense to me. I'm like, oh, I get it. See, I'm playing on top of Old Smoky and Down in the Valley. And I was a five-year-old. And not that I was some kind of virtuoso or prodigy, but I was just, well, I get it. Yeah, I play it and figure it out. Then I was playing TV show themes, you know, because I would just mimic the stuff that I heard, whatever it was. And I got to where I could just play stuff on a harmonica that I had in my head after that. And then it was this, it just, you know, I was able at a very young age to pick things up. Then I started doing other things, playing piano a little bit, playing, you know, rhythmically playing on everything that I possibly could. And I went to brass instruments, and then I went on and on. So from a very, very young age, and then I became a semi-professional musician for a while. I played a lot of clubs. I tried to get a record deal. I worked really hard in my 20s. I wrote a lot of music. And then I was kind of away from it for a while. My kids came along after playing for about 10 years in a particular band as a bassist. And then I've just had a burst of inspiration recently, and I've written a ton of new material and been putting pieces together to assemble a band. And every time I float out these demos and like, hey, you're interested in this, there's always anxiety in me, right? Because I'm like, hey, you know, this guy's going to hate it. He's going to listen to this and think this is the worst stuff ever. I would not want to be a part of it. So a respected musician friend of mine and I had been talking. I said, yeah, I got these demos, and I sent him some stuff. And this was a few days ago. Heard nothing. And I'm thinking, hey, he hates this. He hates this stuff so much, he's not even getting back to me. That's how much he hates. He can't even face me. He can't even go, man, this is bad. This is crap. I would never be a part of this. And these are the kind of crazy things, this self-doubt, right, that's swirling in my head as I become paranoid about this. I'm like, ah, he, you know, he, it's bad. It's just, I thought it was good, but it's bad. Days go by. Then finally what happens, I get the message, hey, man, I've been super busy. I finally got a chance to list the stuff. It's great. I love it. It's inspiring me. I want to be a part of this. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, right? And what did I do? I agonized with a pit in my stomach. I mean, literally, I was worried. I'm like, oh, man. Because I love this guy. He's a phenomenal musician. He's a great guy. And I would love to work. I've never worked with him in that capacity. And I'm thinking, well, it would be really cool. I'll float out the demo, see if he digs it. And I was convinced that he didn't for far too long. I thought, something's up. Another personal story. I was in a radio environment with 5-7 stations, whatever, multiple stations in the halls of this particular office of studios. And there was one particular host who we would just cross paths, very rarely any conversation. We'd see each other in the hallways. We'd see each other getting coffee. He hosted a morning show. I hosted a morning show. But we were always super friendly. Always. Like, everything was completely on the up and up. Well, it started that he became kind of, like, just disconnected. Like, not even, barely even acknowledging me. And I thought, what have I done to make this guy mad? And it started to affect me. And I was like, man, did I do something? Did he perceive that I was nasty to him? Why am I getting the cold shoulder from this guy all of a sudden? What I didn't know is that he had gotten a nasty diagnosis of an illness and he was facing surgery and he was just stressed. And it wasn't that he had anything. It wasn't me at all, right? It wasn't about me. It was just about him, and his world got very small for a little while. Unfortunately, he's doing great now, still on radio. This was 20-some-odd years ago, and he's doing terrific. But he was stressed, really, really stressed. I took it personally, and I got paranoid. So when we see this crazy stuff and we assume that everybody's looking at everybody and everybody wants information on everybody and, you know, we've got this state of surveillance and Big Brother, and it's kind of like what I said, just how big is Big Brother? He's probably not that big, quite honestly. He's probably not watching you. He's probably not concerned about your activity unless you've done something really stupid. Unless you've done something that would have given the officials reason to assume that you might be a threat or you might be dangerous. Chances are nobody cares, right? You're not on any government watch list. Your phones are not getting tapped. Nobody has got a high-powered video surveillance system on you and your every move. Now, that doesn't mean that your every move isn't on video, because there's a lot of video cameras in a lot of places, and you doing whatever could potentially be on that video, and just be aware of that, right? Be aware of that. Go back to the Boston bombers, the Zarnoff brothers. They were caught because of all of the surveillance video, all of the security cameras in that area that just happened to catch street scenes. And what were they able to see? Everybody reacting in a completely different fashion than two individuals. That's all it took. They could see clearly, these guys aren't acting like everyone else. Everyone else is panicking. These guys are calm. That has to be our suspect. So unless you're in that situation where you're going to be caught because you've done something stupid, you're probably not needing to worry. And I know there are people who worry. Believe me, I know. There are people who are convinced everybody's watching them. Everybody's out to get them. Something's coming that's going to be a problem. Therefore, they got to be prepared for it. The prepper mentality, all of that, you name it. But the bottom line is, probably not. Right? On a big, big level, even if you're out there with some high profile, even then, probably not. Probably nothing to worry about. But when we see this from the top, then it filters down. And then everybody's convinced, well, the government's no good. And that's kind of what we're dealing with here, is let's disrupt everything. There are ways to change. There are ways to find all kinds of effective change. But you don't have to completely destroy that which is built and then rebuild it. You don't have to do that. There are ways to reroute, redirect. And this is one of the things that people get frustrated about when it comes to the church, because we seem to move so slowly. Well, we may seem to move slowly, but we move progressively. We move very progressively while maintaining the tradition that's necessary. And that's tough on both sides, because there are those who want no progression and there are those who want no tradition. But the right place to be is in this understanding of there's a tremendous amount of tradition we have to bring along while at the same time affecting positive change. That both and is the key to making it work, and you're not going to have to worry about being paranoid in that world. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things. We discuss that. 15 minutes every afternoon. Disturbing news out of Ethiopia, where a landslide in a garbage dump kills 50 or so. I don't think we have confirmation on the exact numbers at this point. And the post that I put on my Facebook page, why this is more egregious than any terror attack. And why I say that is because, yeah, terror attacks are horrible and egregious and despicable and should never happen. But how preventable that is a real big question. Because, yeah, we can really try to get get back to the beginning of this and say, how do we find a way to prevent something of this nature from ever happening by meeting the needs of those individuals some way, somehow? But even then, it may not be meeting the needs, because they could just be so indoctrinated, so radicalized, that there's really no hope there, right? There's nothing we can do. It is beyond any sort of anything that we could ever hope to achieve from some sort of prevention. And at that point, all we can do is kind of, unfortunately, prepare, anticipate, keep ourselves on some sort of vigilance again. So we talked about earlier, not with paranoia, but just a vigilance. Maybe that's all we can really do. But a landslide in a garbage dump that kills 50 people, that certainly sounds preventable. Now, apparently the Ethiopian government have been trying to find ways to relocate these individuals, but this is not new. People live in garbage dumps across our globe because this is how they survive. They know they can salvage. They know there's enough in the trash that will at least sustain them. And they literally live off the garbage of the culture around them. No one should ever have to live off garbage. All right, we've got this, and God bless him for doing this, and I respect the man when he presents what he presents, and that's Christopher West, who goes out on this theology of the body talk, and, you know, his whole thing is we're eating out of the garbage can, meaning, you know, we haven't understood the gift of sexuality. We haven't really embraced this to the point, and it becomes this very base and debaucherous sort of environment of internet pornography and objectification, and we're eating from the garbage can when God wants something so much better for us. And that analogy is appropriate. But when people are literally eating out of a garbage can and we're not doing something about it, that's a problem. And it's kind of what I was talking about in the first segment of the show, that if we're willing to take action to get to a point, if we're willing to take initial action to get to a point of something that looks way, way, way bigger and better, that's okay. But when the only action appears to be, let's just take care of ourselves first and not worry about it. I mean, what's going to happen in this healthcare reform? Does anybody really know? I keep hearing, we got to repeal. Even my senator, who I voted for, is saying, we got to repeal this thing before we rebuild it. Well, then what happens? Then what happens with those who didn't have health care, who do have health care, who are actually now getting services that they wouldn't have had before? Then what do you do? We got to take a sensible approach. You've heard me say this, and I will continue to say that I have had problems with the mandate, whether it be that the purchase mandate that you either have to have health care or you face fines, or the mandate that says certain coverage has to be there regardless of your religious inclination. Those are both problems. But my problem isn't with people getting care. My problem isn't with finding any opportunity to ensure that those who need health care have health care. How do we do that? And again, if it was, well, we've got the plan, it's going to be better, it's going to cover way, way more individuals than anything we've seen in Obamacare, because you know what? We Republicans are the party of heart, right? We're the ones who want nothing but the best for our culture, for our constituents, for our Americans. We're the party of heart. We're going to make sure that that gets done. And we're going to make sure, interestingly enough, we're the party of our heads as well. The head and the heart, we got them both. We're going to do it. We're going to make this thing work in ways that's going to blow everybody away, because you've never seen anything like this before. We're going to have such an amazing plan. We've got it. We're not going to have it. We got it. We just need to replace this one. More people are going to be covered. No one's going to be left out. No one's going to pay higher premiums. No one's going to have a mandate to buy or get fined. None of that. We're not going to do that. Because we're sensible, we're reasonable, and we're compassionate. You know what? We're going to make this thing work. Now, I get it. I may have been deluded. I may be completely delusional when I look at the conservatism that I've grown up with, that I grew up with, and this is what I put on my Facebook page, speeches from Ronald Reagan and Bush 41 that seem to say things of that nature. Maybe not verbatim, maybe not exactly like that. They may not have been talking about the specific issues that we are dealing with now, but the attitude was that. It seemed, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I just don't remember. But I know this. I valued Jimmy Carter because of that heart that he had, and he seemed to be a sensible individual. He was just unfortunately ineffectual, and with so much economic challenge that faced our globe at the time, it made it really difficult for him to get anything accomplished. I've argued him the most ineffectual president in the history of the presidency. Others say, well, Gerald Ford was probably truly that guy. But, you know, Ronald Reagan didn't come in with this hawkish hatred of all things compassionate, with this such a rugged maverick attitude. I think that there are those who look back on Reagan as this lone ranger cowboy romanticized notion, but listen to what he said. There's plenty of evidence out there on Facebook videos that show that this guy clearly had a heart, and that bled into the Bush presidency, Bush 41. And so those of us who grew up with that conservatism and, you know, a formation of, I mean, you think about that from 12, right? 12 solid years of that attitude. And especially for those of us who were in, at a time of formation through that time. I mean, that's pretty substantial. And certainly I think there are many, I would hope there are many like me, who look back on that with that, not just a romantic notion, but we really have this understanding of, wait a minute, there was something really different about that type of conservatism. And it was a heart there. There was a desire to really find ways to even offer 100% amnesty to immigrants. Where was that when the Democrat Party came into play in the Clinton administration? That went away, right? And now everything is kind of flipped around. Yeah, I've heard those sort of analogies before. Well, the conservatives used to be this and that, blah, blah, blah. And it's happening. I'm seeing it now. Maybe it's a phase of life. Maybe get to that point of disenchantment with your political foundations that you just kind of go, this can't fit. This can't be. How did this happen? I don't know. But I think when people are dying in garbage dumps, I think that when we've got a real issue of this insane individualistic attitude to the point that it just looks like we have no heart, because we're saying, let's strip everybody's health care away even. And who cares? We'll find something else because this is so bad. But yet there are people who need health care. What are we doing to ourselves? What are we doing to our culture? What are we doing to our citizenry? How do we do that? How do we have that attitude and effectively work toward positive change? I don't understand it. Just don't understand it. So we have time for this afternoon. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.